What would you do for the love of your life? A husband finds that out in the most devastating way imaginable during a normal morning in Dallas, Texas. Episode 61 of Crime Over Wine starts right now. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Crime Over Wine, the only podcast with head-scratching true crime stories that are just better over a bottle of wine. I'm your host, Liam Collins, and this week, I am giving you all a bit of a special treat. A few weeks ago, I did a live show at Amada Tapas and Wine in beautiful downtown Chattanooga, and just in case you couldn't make it out to that show, this week, I am going to give you that live recording completely unedited, so you may have to forgive the quality of the sound at times, but I promise you are not going to want to miss a single second of this case with every single twist and turn imaginable. Here's my guest co-host for the week, the owner of Amada Tapas and Wine, Amanda Trotter, with our wine tasting.
Let's do it. So we are starting with a 2021 Sauvignon Blanc. This is going to be from Loire Valley, France. So I am going to keep it a little interactive and actually do like a true tasting. So first in conducting a tasting, we're looking at the color of the wine. So based off of, you can also, I'm going to have to put my mic down to show you guys how to do this. But if you hold a piece of paper up, it is really good when you're testing red wines, but you can kind of see what kind of yellow we're looking at in this white wine. So it's a very like a pale, but super clear. It's not opaque, pale yellow, definitely not gold. So something like gold would be like an oak Chardonnay. You're gonna see a gold color. This is telling me, based off of just looking at this, I could probably guess that this is gonna be a Sauvignon Blanc. And next we're going in for the nose. And I get all of like the apple and pear on the nose on this one. Can somebody else tell me what they're smelling? Michael?
What are you smelling over here? Can I say grapes? Is that cheating?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely there is a grape in there.
Confirmed there's a grape.
Yeah, this is 100% Sauvignon Blanc, so that's the grape we're smelling. Mm. I get a lot of yellow apple on this one. Okay, so we're going in for it. We're trying it now. Okay, so the tasting notes for this one, you can expect, like on the nose, a soft, ripe yellow fruit. But when I taste it, I'm getting lime, which kind of, I didn't get that on the nose at all. Grapefruit, gooseberry. So yeah, this is really, really tasty. We love this one. So if you're going for something safe, this is perfect with our cuisine. So fish, light meat like chicken. So yeah, perfect place for us to start. I hope you guys enjoy it.
So, anyone who has listened to Crime Over Wine knows that I love my big, bold, dry flavors in my reds and my whites, specifically my reds. But this for sure, when we're talking about, you were talking about some yellow flavors in there, and I'm getting apple all the way, all the way through, right through the front. But it softens a good bit in the back as well, so it makes it a lot more subtle.
Yeah.
So I feel like that when people kind of think about whites that, you know, are you know, big and juicy, kind of those kind of flavors, I feel like it kind of attacks and fills the mouth. This I'm not getting as much at all. I feel like it's a very nice subtle flavors all the way through.
Yes, absolutely. And I think for me, if I was going to go like a cheese pairing on this, I'm thinking like brie with some honey on top. Would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love some cheese and wine nights. That's when I'm not watching true crime, I am indeed drinking wine and eating cheese all at the same time.
Yeah.
So fantastic. Well, y'all ready to talk about some crime?
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
This story is so perfect for Valentine's Day.
Hold on tight.
Yeah.
Hold on tight. Right. So this is, of course, Valentine's Day weekend, or Galentine's Day weekend, whatever y'all want to call it.
Whichever you celebrate.
And it is the weekend of love, of course. And so I want to tell you all a story about what happens when love goes a little too far. When high school sweethearts rekindle their relationship, a bizarre reality is revealed among them. Tonight, I want to tell you the story of Jamie Faith and the interstate love affair. Jamie and Jennifer Faith were hopelessly in love with each other. They had met in 2005 on a blind date, and as friends and family described their relationship, they were practically inseparable. They officially got married in Vegas in 2012, and Jamie even formally adopted Jennifer's daughter, who she had from her previous marriage. The whole family moved from Arizona to Dallas, Texas in 2017, and by all stretches of the imagination, they were a perfectly normal suburban family. Jennifer was a speech therapist, and Jamie was an IT director for American Airlines, and they made friends with their neighbors, ran their errands, and took their dog out for a walk around their quiet, normal neighborhood, just like everyone would expect. And that is exactly what they were doing on the morning of October 9th, 2020. Jennifer and Jamie left through their front door with their dog's leash in hand, just as they always did first thing in the morning. Absolutely nothing different here. But it was different, because in the shadows of the trees, just nearby their home, crouched a man with a gun. As soon as the couple turned onto their street to begin their walk, the man opened fire on the couple, striking Jamie, seven times. Three were to his head, and they were fatal. Jamie fell to the ground dead, while Jennifer fell, shrieking in fear, totally unharmed. The man then ran up to Jennifer, took her wedding ring, punched her, and tied her hands with duct tape before taking off into his black pickup truck.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
So she was also assaulted.
Well, yes. Yeah. So going back over that again. So basically, like, robbed in the early morning hours of the day, tied her hands behind her back. Again, this was, by all stretches of the imagination, from an appearance level here, just a really horrible, brutal, violent robbery. And so Jennifer was just absolutely terrified and caught off guard, and now was suddenly a grieving widow on top of that, within just moments taking her dog for a walk with the love of her life of 15 years, just as she had done so many times before. When police arrived, they took Jennifer to the police station and closed the scene off to investigate what had just happened to Jamie. They search around and they find that a lot of the houses in the neighborhood actually had Ring doorbell cameras, which captured a good bit of the street where Jamie had been shot and killed just moments before. That's when they saw what had played out in the street: the dog walk, the man, the shrieking, and the black truck, which now they could tell very clearly had a decal in the back window with a T on it, but they couldn't really tell what kind of T it was. So police put out public notices with blurry pictures of this truck and that T decal, asking the public if anyone knew anyone with that kind of truck with that specific decal on it. Jennifer even got on local TV stations, begging the public for help, finding the person responsible for shooting and killing Jamie in cold blood. But that proved to be a difficult task, even for police. Even with that fairly specific detail, finding a specific black pickup truck in Texas was basically like finding a needle in a haystack.
So my first thought is, okay, the T, it's got to be for Tennessee. It's got to be.
Hold that thought, yeah. Amanda. Hold that thought. Yeah, again, around here, I mean, that's like what every other block is that signature black pickup
truck. Yeah, we
see
the orange T everywhere.
It's everywhere. But again, keep in mind, we're in Texas, and there's not a whole lot of volunteer fans in Texas,
no,
right? Not a whole lot. Yeah. So again, just a really odd thing. But in the months after Jamie's sudden death, Jennifer's friends, family, and neighbors rallied around her. They comforted her, brought her and her daughter meals for months, and a GoFundMe page supporting the family had raised $60,000 to cushion the blow of Jamie's sudden and tragic murder. But police were struck by the crime. On the surface level, this looked to be, like we were talking about, a really violent robbery in a well-off suburban community, just as the sun had been rising. But to a trained eye, investigators could tell it was so much more than that. The shooting felt personal. The brutal nature of the attack led investigators to believe pretty highly that this was not some random burglary, but instead that the person responsible for shooting Jamie to death likely knew at least one person in the couple. So they ask Jennifer questions about what happened that morning, and Jennifer, in this initial questioning, can be seen just bawling over her husband's death. It was clear to investigators that she was just purely distraught over her sudden and violent, loss. And investigators ask them if it would be okay to look through Jennifer's phone, and she actually ends up agreeing. The activity on Jennifer's phone was pretty normal for a suburban Texas mom, nothing too out of the ordinary, except for one mention of a man named Darren Lopez. In that text message, Jennifer is talking to a friend, confiding in her about an emotional affair that she had been having with Darren, her high school sweetheart.
Okay, so Darren is her high school sweetheart, and this is her second marriage, and her current husband has just been killed. Police are going through her phone, and they see that she's talking to her high school sweetheart.
Yeah, that's correct. So the text message was months ago, months before Jamie's death, to be clear. But definitely hold that thought, because I see where you're going with this, and you're not too far off 100%. But point being is there's obvious red flag. I mean, anyone who, anytime that anyone gets shot or killed in a relationship, first thing person they're going to is, find motive in the spouse, right?
Yeah, first things first.
Yeah. Well, Darren Lopez was a distinguished Army veteran, a Green Beret, who did multiple tours in Iraq before officially retiring from service after suffering a traumatic brain injury. So police look into this Darren guy, and they're interested to learn that Darren and Jennifer had dated for several years in high school and well into college before going their separate ways. And they are also interested to learn that he owned none other than a black pickup truck.
Okay, so he's an Army veteran with a brain injury. And so we're assuming that he would be probably pretty skilled in killing somebody.
A Green Beret. Those guys are no joke, right? So definitely, knows his way around a gun, 100%. And again, like the it's not looking great for Darren at the moment, right? I mean, obviously. And so, again, he has the truck they've been looking for. He has all the motive in the world. He's in love with this woman, and suddenly there's some a murder that takes place of her husband. And so, yeah, I'm suspicious of Darren right away, right? And so. Investigators learn that Darren lived in Nashville, and they go out to pay him a visit. And when they do get out there, right there in the driveway is the black pickup truck with that T decal they've been looking for. So they approach Darren, tell him why they're there, and the story he tells is almost too unbelievable.
Crime Over Wine is sponsored by BetterHelp. As someone who's used therapy for years, I know that finding a therapist can sometimes be a stress on its own, juggling your full-time job, your family, your friends, your podcast, and trying to find the right therapist on top of that can almost feel impossible. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp matches you with a therapist that works for you on your terms. It's online, it's remote, and by filling out a few questions, BetterHelp can match you to one of 33,000 licensed professional therapists in as little as a few days. And because finding a new therapist is a lot like finding a new bottle of wine, if you don't jive with your therapist, you can easily switch to a new one at no additional cost. You can get 10% off your first month of BetterHelp by going to BetterHelp.com/crimeoverwine. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/crimeoverwine for 10% off your first month. Join over 4 million people who decided to get help and get happy with BetterHelp.
Hello, everyone. It's Heather Hawley, the co-host of Crime Over Wine Weekly, a brand new show keeping you up to date on the latest in the true crime world as it unfolds. We know how much you rely on Crime Over Wine on Wednesdays to learn about new cases, but on Crime Over Wine Weekly, you'll hear our takes on the cases making headlines right now. Join us every Sunday for a new episode of your new Crime and Wine obsession.
So we are starting with Casa de Moraes. This is a 2021, and it is from Dow, Portugal. So we are going into Portuguese wine now. This wine has 9 different grapes in it. So this is going to be a filled blend. They in Portugal tend to do filled blends very often. And that is like a technical way of saying that they don't know sometimes what grapes are in their fields. We do know 9 grapes have been identified in this. It is a mix between white and red varietals. There's about 7 red varietals and then 2 white varietals in this wine. And they have the craziest names, and I'm not gonna go and run us through all 9 of those varietals. You are looking at like Tempranillo, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. That is one of the varietals in here. So on the nose, so we're going color. If you want to do the paper thing like I told you last time, it's a little bit lighter in body. You can definitely tell that we've got two white varietals in here. If it was all red varietals, it would have a lot of a deeper ruby rather than this like light transparent ruby color. So on the nose, I immediately am getting like strawberry, raspberry, kind of like smacks you in the face, kind of strawberry, definitely like ripe red fruit. And this wine in particular is unoaked. It's got 9 months in stainless steel. So unoaked, you're not going to have that like buttery kind of finish. The vanilla leather taste.
A lot of fruits.
Yeah, and still in the same as the nose, I'm getting all strawberry.
Yeah.
Like a lot of strawberry.
It's a lot of definitely a lot of strawberry, yeah. But it's much lighter than I feel like than I was expecting a lot too, because it's a pretty light, I can't tell because of the light, but
yeah.
I feel like it's pretty light, but on the darker side of the light.
It's got a good body, and it really holds against, like, some, like, you could have some dark meat with this, and it would still hold its own. But
very
with
true.
Those two, like, white grapes in there, it definitely lightens it up, but it makes it interesting.
Yeah.
So, Casa de Moraz, everyone.
Yeah, and big flavors, too, at the same time. You get, it's smooth, but it's not, like subtle. It's very, very, very bold kind of flavors that
yes.
we're talking about.
This one on our menu, I immediately always pair this with our grilled octopus. It's so good. An octopus, I think our octopus honestly tastes like chicken. So hence why this one, I think goes really, really nicely with it.
Great octopus, by the way. If y'all have not had the octopus,
yeah,
y'all are missing
out. The octopus is amazing.
Yeah.
This company is founded upon octopus and wine. So,
love it.
But yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this one. This is one of my favorite ones on our menu.
Awesome. And I do, because the best Tempranillo I've ever had was at our last live show.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a little bit of that in there too, like subtly though.
Wait
like
till our third one.
Oh,
okay. The third
one,
I picked
I'm
it
excited.
Just for you.
Oh, good. Yeah. Excellent. Just for Liam.
It's
perfect.
So good. It's so good.
We're so cute. I love that for us.
This one is a really good charcuterie wine too.
Yeah.
I think it's a great, like if you're not a big white wine or like bubbles drinker, this is a great place to start in a meal.
Well, I feel like there's like a really subtle difference between a wine that's just standalone, you can have it, you know, just for your, like, if you're just looking for a good glass of wine. And there's a good, there's a wine, though, that is also very good, you know, exclusively or intended to be good with you know, paired with something, right?
Yeah,
with seafood,
sure.
with chicken, with red meat, or whatever it is.
I think this one is an all-star when it comes to pairings, but I also would consider this, like, a porch sipper. I still think it's crushable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Crushable.
Crushable.
I love that. Okay. That's my new thing. There
you
go. Fantastic. Well, what do you say we get back to the case, guys? Ooh, I left y'all on a good cliffhanger, didn't I? Yes, I did. Y'all want to find out what happens? All right, well, let's do it. So right before we left before the break, I was about to tell you what Darren told police when they approached him about Jamie's death. So Darren tells investigators that he was trying to save Jennifer's life. Here's how. So, like I said, Darren and Jennifer had met in high school, went to prom together, and dated well into college, but they had eventually gone their separate ways for one reason or another, right? We've all been there, all had that high school relationship. But in March of 2020, Darren Lopez was recently separated from his wife and living in Nashville with his three daughters and two stepdaughters when he had connected with Jennifer on LinkedIn, where all love stories start. And the two started talking all over again. Now, it wasn't long after that when he says they had fallen in love all over again. It all came flooding back, the high school prom, etc. They had exchanged an average of about 500 texts and emails per day and had occasionally called each other for hours at a time. In some of these messages, Jennifer called Darren her, quote, one and only love, and the pair started talking about a future together. But let's remind everyone, right? Jennifer at this point is married to Jamie. And not long after Jennifer and Darren had rekindled this old flame, it became clear to Darren why Jennifer was engaging in this emotional affair so heavily. About a month after Jennifer and Darren had reconnected, Jennifer tells Darren that Jamie had found out about her, and he like absolutely freaked out about their relationship with Darren and started getting aggressive and started to hit her. Jennifer even sent text messages. She said Jamie sent her threatening to sexually assault and drown her. Jennifer even sent some pictures of some of the injuries that Jamie had inflicted on her to Darren, and Darren was pissed. Jamie at this point had also started to email Darren threateningly, telling him to stay far away from his wife and his family, adding, "Enjoy knowing you can't do a thing about it." Jennifer's friend even got involved as well, emailing Darren, asking him to step in and to do something about the abuse that Jennifer was experiencing. Darren was worried about Jennifer's safety, he said, but she said that she didn't want to go to police because she didn't want her daughter to see Jamie arrested by authorities. And so Darren wanted to honor her wishes and not go to police either. So one night in a phone call with Darren, Jennifer makes an eerie suggestion. She suggests that the only way that she was going to be free from the horrible and dark marriage was if Jamie was dead. And she says that Darren should be the one to kill him.
So it sounds like Jennifer has really, really poor taste in men.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I think I'm going back to the small detail that Darren had a brain injury.
Fair.
And that's freaking me out a little bit.
Yeah.
I've seen too many documentaries on footballers.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, so
yeah.
There's definitely some questionable decision making happening.
Yeah, well, and going back to that too as well, because there's, you know, a trained Green Beret, was in the army, did multiple, I think I read like 10 tours in Iraq. And so point being is like, he knows his stuff. And so like when a lot of traumatic brain injuries, like you just resort back to like who you are at your very core. And so like clearly this is triggering something in him. I think that's very fair to say that all of this is just not sitting well with him and he's wanting to do something about it.
Yeah, I also think there's something that like chemically happens to your brain, like with your first love. There's something about that high school sweetheart that just like makes you make stupid decisions.
That's fair.
Like driving 3 hours in the middle of the night. Can I get a woot woot?
Well, and so. And also going back a little bit here too, because there's also the fact that what was going on in Darren's life, right? Like Darren had just been separated from his wife, so like he was feeling all sorts of feelings there. So like probably, you know, he was like middle-aged-ish, and so like he was probably feeling like a little like hopeless, you know, to a certain extent, like a little lost. And then the brain injury, and then this all started, let's keep in mind, in March of 2020. Do I need to explain to anyone what was going on in the world at that time? Right?
Yeah.
And so
no,
like
we were all insane.
Right. Same. Still insane, by the way. But like, you know, but point being is like all this stuff is happening. Like it's just it has to be all hitting Darren all at once. And he's just like ready to do something about, you know, to save, you know, his one and only, his the love of his life, you know, even after all these years.
Yeah. And these text messages were October of 2020.
Yes, correct. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So they reconnected on LinkedIn in March. And then, so they were been communicating for 7 months at this point and like picking right back up where they left off in high school. So, So Darren, you know, ended up driving 10 hours from Nashville to Dallas in that black pickup truck with a T decal, which I think is pretty safe to assume, again, meant volunteers. No shade to the volunteer fans in the room. with the intent to kill Jamie. And he told police that he was afraid that if he didn't do anything, that Jamie was going to kill Jennifer instead. And so he parked his truck outside of the Faith's home, and he crouched down in the bushes waiting for Jamie to come out. And when he saw the couple leave the home with their dog, he ambushed them, aimed the gun at Jamie, and squeezed the trigger 9 times. When Jamie fell to the ground, he stole Jennifer's rings, threw her screens, and tied her hands with duct tape to make it all look like some random robbery.
I'm totally thinking now on this like T decal. Why is the T decal still on your? Why are you driving that truck?
Yeah.
still driving that truck?
Hold that thought, Amanda. Yeah. We are definitely going to come back to the TD Cal. It's not going away anytime soon. But again, you know, I also, like, when I was reading through this part, I was thinking, like, why, like, how did Jennifer not know? You know what I mean? Because it's like he attacks you, he steals your stuff, and you don't know that he's this man that you've known for 40 years at least. Like, that kind of struck me a little bit as well. And so, but then I was thinking, okay, well, maybe, like, the rush of the moment. Yeah. Like, you know, it's been a couple of years, like, that whole thing. And, like, but like, you know, they've been, you know, communicating for several months at this point. So it's just, something's not sitting well with me here, even at this point either, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, on January 11th, 2021, Darren was arrested and charged with murder. Between his own admissions and the violent act caught on camera by the neighbor's Ring cameras, investigators were confident that their case was ironclad shut. But Jennifer isn't admitting to any of this, to be clear, and Darren is just fine with that. Darren says that he believes he was going to jail to save Jennifer and her daughter's lives, and he believes that that was an honorable sacrifice for him. And the whole time, Darren's attorney is trying to convince Darren to turn on Jennifer, but he absolutely refuses. At this point, investigators had used warrants to search through Darren's cell phone and financial records to confirm that Darren was indeed at the Faith's home the day that Jamie had died. And so the case against him is just getting tighter and tighter and tighter. But that wasn't all that they learned through Darren's cell phone records. They learned a lot, actually. Enough to make a second arrest. Investigators decide on February 24th, 2021, to take Jennifer Faith into custody. Crime Over Wine is proud to support Emancipet. Veterinary care shouldn't be a mystery, and neither should your pet's health. Emancipet's licensed veterinarians have answers to all of your pet questions. In the Vet Ed video series, veterinarians break down topics from spaying and neutering to protecting your pet in cold weather. Learn more at emancipet.org and watch Vet Ed on the Emancipet YouTube channel.
Hello, Crime Over Wine listeners. I am Rachel.
And I'm Heather.
We are the hosts of Like Mother, Like Murder.
We bring you the good, the badass, and the crime.
Each week, we bring you stories from missing and murdered
to survivors and women who empower you.
And of course, some mom talk sprinkled in.
Check us out wherever you get your podcasts at Like Mother, Like Murder.
And give us a follow on social media so that we can say hi.
Okay, love you, bye.
Okay, love you, bye.
Let's talk about wine. We have our last red, and this one is called Reto Reserva. So Reto in Spanish means challenge. The front of this bottle has like a knot from the actual vines in the vineyard. I absolutely love, love, love this wine. I think it's an awesome one to end on. I think it's a great representation of Spanish wine in general. It's fantastic. This is a 2015. It's a 100% Tempranillo grape. A lot of people, their introduction to Spanish wine is usually a Tempranillo. Since it is a Reserva, that means that it is spending up to 18 months in oak. So this is... let's see, yeah, aged in French oak for 18 months. And it is meant to be enjoyed with tapas. So this is one of our best sellers at Amada.
Good place to be at then.
Best place to be at, exactly. So the flavors that come through on this one, you're looking at raspberry, cranberry, licorice, wood, toast, which I thought was interesting, and leather. So yeah, go ahead and give this one a go. A lot deeper red than our last one. Definitely no white varietals inside of this one. So you're looking at 100% Tempranillo. And like I said, 18 months in French oak. It's got like a really fun, I know, I just saw Megan's reaction was like, It's like a warm hug. Yeah, this one is so, so good. And like I said, I picked this one for you because you told me how much you really like the Tempranillos. This was like my intro to Spanish wine and like when I really fell in love with Spanish wine. And Tempranillos are like so fairly priced. Like, you can find this at one of our local liquor stores for under, like, 20, I think it's, like, $18. Mm. Yeah, that's so not bad. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
And it's delicious. Yeah, and it's a really great table wine.
Yeah. Well, and it's a darker flavor, color here for sure, 100%. Yeah. And also, so when you said leather, I sniffed it. And then, you know, it's funny, I immediately was like, oh, that's leather. That's kind of like a leathery kind
it's
of
like
flavor.
It's like you just bought a new car.
Right.
And like, you know, that's, I don't know, it's got that vibe. Mm. It's delicious. And I get the licorice note as well.
Yeah. You know, I just got that.
And I don't really like licorice that much, but like it comes like through like very like, it's very velvety and soft the way it comes through in this.
You know, my mom would love this wine, I have to say. She loves Tempranillos, first of all, but she also loves leathery wines, and she loves licorice. I can't stand her for that, but she loves licorice. Well, I hate licorice.
If you love licorice, I just, in my opinion, that's a serial killer quality.
That's fair. My mom, as far as I know, has not killed anybody, as far as I'm aware. But I will say, so it gives a lot of, it's a lot of, experience throughout the mouth, right?
Yeah.
Because and that's in my definition anyways, the definition of a really good wine, because you get a lot in the front and you got a good amount in the back, in the back too, and you can kind of, if you pay attention to the transformation of flavors that you're experiencing from the front to the back, that's when you kind of can you know, tend to flaunt yourself a little bit.
Beautifully said. Yeah, this is one of those, in the wine community we describe wine a lot as like how it treats your palate. This has a beautiful crescendo, and then it sticks with you. It's like our first wine, our Sauvignon Blanc, has a big spike and it's gone. It's very crisp and clean. This is one of those, like I said, it's kind of like a warm hug. It's got a nice build, and then it also stays with you for a little bit. It's very luscious. Mm. Another fun thing that I like to do, this is me 3 glasses of wine in now, but another fun thing I like to do is like put a zodiac sign on a wine.
Ooh.
And I'm like, this girl, she's a Scorpio.
Oh, Scorpio.
She's a Scorpio.
Yes.
She's got her boots on and her sweater.
Yes.
And like,
any Scorpios in the house?
Yeah.
Scorpios? No. Okay, good. We can talk all Bummer. We can talk all the trash about Scorpios then, because I've got some Scorpio stories. So. Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is a beautiful, like bold, but also luscious and well-rounded wine.
Yeah. No, I'm into this one, and I usually don't like oaky wines. Honestly, like if it's kind of if it is baked a lot, I don't know if that's not the right word for it. I know it isn't fermented, I suppose, in oak for a long time.
Oaky wines have that baked fruit element to them,
like
a stewed strawberry, like jammy, and so that really does come through in this one. But Rioja is known for their use of French oak, and they do it in all of their methods are so like truly methodical, and they're like, I don't have the bottle in front of me, but all Rioja wines have, I guess, a very specific label that is printed on the back of them, like with a statement saying like, we followed these procedures, and that this wine gets to be called a Rioja Tempranillo because they followed these guidelines.
Wow.
So they're just very particular. It's a very science-based
exclusive
region.
Love that.
Extremely.
I love that. I kind of want to be a part of that club.
I know.
Yeah, love that. I feel like I am.
Yeah, you are.
I'm learning so much about you about wine tonight, Amanda. All right, let's dive right back into Jennifer and Jamie here, because we have so much to talk about here, y'all. So y'all want to find out how this plane lands? Ooh, okay. Keep your glasses close, guys. Keep your glasses close for this one. So when we just left you all, Jennifer and Jamie's wife and life partner of 15 years was facing charges related to his murder. Jennifer was being charged with obstruction of justice, though. And here's why, Amanda. When investigators had looked through Darren's phone, they found texts from Jennifer telling him that she was going to erase her phone and that he should do the same. The text message was sent on January 11th, the same day that Darren was being taken into custody and the same day when Jennifer was being taken in for questioning. And so, needless to say, Darren was a little preoccupied, right? And so he didn't clear his phone, and a whole new layer to this investigation was about to unfold.
Okay, so let's see. So January 11th, the text message was sent the same day he was brought into custody.
Correct.
And she told him to delete everything on his phone.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. We're all picking up what I'm putting down here. Correct. Right. Yeah. And so it's you know, giving super incriminating here 100%. And going back to what you were talking about before, right? Because you mentioned about how, you know, how he, you know, he had all these text messages and had all these, you know, these things that, you know, that, and to be clear, you know, these months of text messages that Darren and Jennifer had been exchanging were not on Jennifer's phone at all. Right. So all this. So when she was taken in for questioning and was like, hey, we're going to look through your phone. Like none of this was seen because Jennifer had, again, erased her entire phone, basically, except for that one mention, if you remember, that she admitted to a friend that she was cheating on Jamie with Darren, or at least emotionally anyways.
Yeah. And we're assuming Darren didn't delete the text messages. We don't know yet, but we're assuming he didn't delete them.
So, yeah, he
didn't. He was told to.
He was told to. He did not delete the text messages, again, because he had his hands tied, right, for lack of better words. He was arrested. And so he had, point being is after he had been arrested, he had received this text message, or Jennifer had sent this text message. And so that didn't happen. That did not happen where she, he did not delete a single text message. And so this is when, you know, their entire history is unfolding about what exactly had happened. So, investigators had also found text messages that Jennifer sent to friends and family, updating them on the investigation into Jamie's death. And Darren was also on those group chats. But even beyond that, investigators had also found text messages Jennifer sent to Darren in the days after Jamie's death that were pretty interesting and, y'all, like, very incriminating. Just a few days after Jennifer was seen on the local news begging the public to come forward with information related to that pickup truck, Jennifer texted Darren. And Amanda, can you read the text message? You have it there, that Jennifer, again, this is Jennifer to Darren.
This is my best Jennifer voice. I woke up in a bit of a panic, ... Something is eating away at me, telling me you need to take the sticker out of the back window of the truck. I don't normally overreact like this. Really, think you need to get that sticker off ASAP, like today.
I can't imagine what was telling her to text Darren to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the fact that it was on the loose.
That was a T for Tennessee.
Right. Oh, 100%. Right. Yeah. And again, so Darren's in Nashville. I think, again, they never said outright, like, what the, like, investigators usually don't get into that much detail. Like, they don't really care about, like, what the T is. But, like, it was a T that, you know, that matched to a T, what Darren had in the back of his truck. And again, you were asking too, like, why is that T still on the back of his truck? Jennifer was doing everything in her power to make sure that wasn't happening. Days after, hours after, she was on the news begging people to come forward with information leading to that truck.
Yeah.
Because she thought, or didn't think, that whoever was driving that truck was involved in Jamie's death.
Yeah. Darren's screws weren't loose, he would have been driving a different car at this point.
Yeah. Well, so investigators were convinced that Jennifer was far more involved in Jamie's murder than she was letting on. But even after Jennifer was taken into custody, Darren stood by and refused to turn on her and stuck to her original story that he drove down to Dallas to kill Jamie in an effort to save Jennifer and her daughter from his violent wrath. But he said all of that despite the investigators and even his own lawyers trying to convince him that Jennifer may not have even been entirely honest with him about what was happening in their marriage. And Darren's defense lawyers say it took them about 6 months, but they were finally able to get him to see the light, that Jennifer wasn't actually in as much danger as she made Darren believe. Investigators were able to determine that the emails that Jamie had sent to Darren after he found out about Jennifer's love affair were faked. They were not sent from Jamie at all. They were an email that Jennifer created herself to try and convince Darren to come down and kill Jamie. The friend who was emailing Darren also wasn't actually that friend either. It too was an email that Jennifer had created entirely on her own. And those pictures, remember those pictures of the injuries that Jennifer sent to Darren, of the brutal attack that he had inflicted on her in his violent fits of rage? Well, those were stock photos. They weren't of Jennifer at all.
It just sounds like Jennifer had a lot of time on her hands during COVID, as we all did.
Well, some of us watched true crime documentaries. Some of others of us watched true crime documentaries a little too much, like Jennifer did.
I'm appalled. I just don't understand what the... Is that true? Like, did she want somebody to come and kill her husband?
Well, and I can't imagine why either, right? Again, like, they were perfectly happy by all accounts, as far as I'm aware, but, like, maybe she was just over it, you know? Like, I don't know. And to be clear, like, that is still not entirely clear. I was absent, again, what, like, a lot of, you know, spouses end up doing just for, like, financial reasons, like, absent that whole situation.
It's just the story spinning and, like, the length at which she's going is so alarming.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Mm. And, again, to go into that much detail, because, again, like, we talk all the time about, like, actual victims of domestic violence, right? And, like, those, like that's so insulting, like, frankly, to the people who actually experience what Jamie or what Jennifer said to have been experiencing. It makes me like a little angry, frankly, like I'm getting a little warm and I can't tell if it's the story, the wine, or maybe a little bit of both. But you know, it doesn't make any sense to like go on the internet and like find those photos just to convince someone else to murder your husband. It's odd.
Yeah. No, there are easier ways out. It's called divorce.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Right. Or just like leave him, right? Yeah. Like you don't even have to go that route. Like you really don't want to. But, you know, in September of that year, prosecutors had changed Jennifer's charge to a murder up for hire charge, and alleging that Jennifer had used Darren to kill Jamie so that she could be with Darren herself. It changed the way all of her friends and family had looked at what had happened in the months after Jamie's death. The grieving widow suddenly seemed like a whole act. And a lot of people who gave her money to make Jamie's death slightly more bearable felt bamboozled. But by this point, investigators had been able to figure out that fund was all a scam too. Investigators had proof that Jennifer used the $60,000 collected using that GoFundMe page to buy Darren all sorts of gifts, including a new TV and flight tickets. She also gave him access to two TV cards that she had also paid off using that money. But yet she left the $6,500 bill for Jamie's funeral unpaid. GoFundMe ended up refunding everyone who contributed to the page, but investigators also said that she tried to use the $629,000 worth of death benefits from Jamie's life insurance policy to try and buy a new house with Darren in Tennessee, but that never ended up happening.
Oh, this woman. So, at this point, GoFundMe's involved, and... So you're saying that she took this money and started buying these gifts?
Correct.
For Darren?
Correct.
Did Darren know she was buying these gifts for him?
He knew, he was very aware that the gifts were happening. I am not totally sure / convinced that he knew where the money was coming from. From all this, I'm assuming that she didn't, maybe he figured that it came from some benefit that she got as a result of Jamie's death. But he didn't know. He was very aware that the gifts were coming from Jennifer.
And had he it had been disclosed at this point that he did murder her.
Well, so a lot of these gifts.
He hasn't come clean about that yet.
No. Okay. So he never really disputes it 100%, to be clear. But this happened even in the months before he was arrested. Sometime in the year after that the murder happened is when Darren gets arrested, and all this happens in that year.
Okay.
Yeah, but again, and this is my little like crime tip of the night, right? Like this is why I don't mess with GoFundMe pages, frankly. Like no shade against GoFundMe, but there are like so many times that people just use that for bad reasons, right? Because there are so many, like, I think about how whenever some tragedy du jour happens, right? Like, the first thing you see is a GoFundMe page. There are, anyone can set up a GoFundMe page. Like, anyone can make that happen. And so, point being is, like, you know, if y'all are contributing to a GoFundMe page, like, verify that that's the person actually, you know, who's going to be benefiting from this whole thing. That's the right page. Because otherwise, you might be just giving your $20 or whatever it is, you know, to some scammer, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Darren was, you know, of course, shaken up by what he had been convinced of over months and months of conversations by investigators and even his own lawyers. Conversations that laid out the case that Jennifer had lied to him to get him to do the unthinkable. He said Jennifer made him her weapon to do her bidding. And he admitted to police that he shot Jamie and stole Jennifer's ring to make it all look like a robbery at her direction. And he said he immediately got back into his truck and drove back to Nashville, throwing Jennifer's ring out of the window of his truck somewhere in Arkansas. And the whole time he was convinced that he was doing it to save Jennifer. And in the months after she was charged, Darren agreed to testify against her in her trial.
Good for you, Darren. But also,
I don't know if I'm rooting for Darren.
I don't know
if
I'm rooting for Darren either. Yeah, this is, it's definitely getting a little sticky. Yeah.
Well, but going back to what you're talking about the traumatic brain injury also, like that I have like so many questions about in so many different ways.
Yeah.
But also like the fact that like again, I have to go back to like who Jennifer was as a person, which is clearly not much. But I can't help but think that she used that to her advantage to a certain extent, because he clearly, and I don't know how traumatic of a brain injury it was. It clearly was enough, you know, to make him have to be discharged from the military.
If we log it as a brain injury, it's
sure.
not good.
Yeah, brain injuries are not good. Right, yeah. Absolutely, 100%. And so point being is, like, I don't know how much his judgment was skewed. And so I don't know how much Jennifer knew about all that. And so, but point being is, like, she definitely used that to her advantage to a certain extent,
No, absolutely.
Right?
She's totally showing signs of, like, a master manipulator. And
right.
I would be very, very curious to see Darren's brain scan, like...
That's fair.
If you've ever watched that, like when a doctor will
do
go.
Do I want to?
No. Well, I'm on TikTok. There's like a doctor that will go and look at like serial killers' brains.
Oh.
And
I want that.
You should look into it.
Yeah.
So I would be and then they'll say like they had a super enlarged frontal lobe. So brain injury is absolutely indicative of these qualities that start to, you know, are tacked on to serial killers and killers in general.
Okay, we're going to have to exchange TikToks
after
this, 100%, because I'm into whatever you're following,
100%.
So, but, you know, on February 7th, 2022, Jennifer pleaded guilty to interstate murder for hire in an attempt to avoid the death penalty. Instead, she was sentenced to life in prison. As part of her plea deal, Jennifer agreed to admit that she was never abused by Jamie and that she would pay $6,500 to cover the cost of Jamie's funeral and an additional $250,000 in fines. The judge in her case said that Jennifer's behavior after Jamie had died was, quote, pure evil. And federal prosecutors said that she had, quote, poured a sob story to reporters and to law enforcement.
Yeah, it takes a special type of person to, like, fake the mourning process.
Right,
like, it makes you mad.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, and not even, like, beyond that, right? Yeah. Because, like, we've all lost somebody, and, like, nobody's given me $600,000.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, like, it's like sadistic to a certain point, to a certain extent. Because it's like, you know, you take, like, the worst thing that you can possibly imagine happening to somebody, and... profit off of that, or attempt to, at the very least.
A financial gain.
Right, exactly, So, as for Darren, though, because I know we're all curious about what happens to him, he went to trial in July of 2022, and he was convicted of murder as well, and sentenced to 62 years in prison. Jury members later spoke to reporters, though, saying that they hadn't found Darren's self-defense argument very persuasive, and said that there were plenty of other choices that Darren could have made that wouldn't have involved him killing Jamie that day.
Yeah, I agree. Back to the brain scan thing.
Right.
Like, and that's probably where he's sitting at right now, is he's gonna, I don't know the end of the story, but I'm assuming, like, if he's in jail right now and is trying to get an appeal, that a brain scan is probably in his best interest literally prove that you have a brain injury, like, might get him out of all of this.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, and again, so, like, going back to what we were talking about before about, you know, the circumstances surrounding, you know, his mental state, like, clearly, you know, not very good, but, you know, I think about, like the convincing that it must have taken to convince Darren finally that, like, this wasn't all what it seemed, you know, to be, and, like, he was convince, again, his lawyer said it took them 6 months to convince him, to convince Darren that Jennifer was lying to him.
He wasn't going to turn on his high school sweetheart.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so think about the level of loyalty. You know what I mean? And like Jennifer was, again, using that all to her advantage at this point.
Yeah.
Because she didn't kill anybody. You know what I mean? At least not directly.
Yeah.
So, but I do think it's interesting again, but even with that in mind, right? Like Jennifer got life in prison. Let's reemphasize that. Darren only got 62 years, which like is basically life in prison for someone of his age.
No, she claimed emotional cheating, but this was emotional killing.
Right. Yeah, oh, 100%. Right. You manipulate somebody and then they follow through on all your bidding, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, so yeah, just so many questions. But, you know, today Darren is asking for a new trial and asking for a reduced sentence from the governor of Texas. He says that there wasn't a lot of evidence that was presented at his trial that pointed jury members to his traumatic brain injury that he says fired his judgment. On top of that, Darren says that he deserves a new trial because he doesn't think it was made clear enough how much he had cooperated with police in the investigation against Jennifer beyond a brief mention. It's not clear if the governor's office is interested in reducing Darren's sentence or if he is even interested in exploring that possibility, like opening up that conversation.
For Darren's sake, I do hope that they do a deep dive into the brain injury thing, because it sounds like he himself is kind of like, hey, I might not be, you know, all my marbles might not be in the right basket.
Yeah.
Because if it took 6 months to convince him that his high school sweetheart
truly
manipulated him and made him a murderer just by some sweet text messages and a fake email or two.
Right.
It shouldn't be. It didn't sound like she really had to twist his arm.
Right. Well, and again, I go back to the fact that, like, it was his... you know, true love, right? Like, or at least what he says was, like, his true love, his high school sweetheart. And, like, who knows after that injury how much he had reverted back to that. You know what I mean? Had reverted back to being 16 and young and hot again. You know what I mean? Like, we all want that, unfortunately. Yeah. And so, like, you know, and so he probably felt that a good bit of, like, I feel what Jennifer is giving to me, you know, all over again all these years later. And I want that back. You know what I mean? And like, I'll do anything to get that back. I will do anything to get that back.
Yeah. You know what they say? Sometimes we'll do crazy things for love.
True that. Yeah. So, happy Valentine's Day,
happy
folks.
Happy Valentine's Day, y'all.
Right. Well, that is all that we have for you guys tonight.
That wraps it up. I hope you guys enjoyed the wine. Yeah. Thank you all so much.
So, if you enjoyed yourself tonight, you're able to scan this QR code. It'll take you right to our website and everything you need to know about Crime Over Wine. Thank you all so much for coming out tonight. It's been a great time. You can also leave us a 5-star rating and a review if you want to support our work. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Make sure also, most importantly, that you guys treat your bartenders and your servers very well tonight. They worked so hard to make this all happen. We were just sitting here talking.
Shout out to Amada staff, Megan, our Frodo House manager, who kept it all together tonight. Make sure you have your wine in front of you. And Max and Connor who are around here as well. So thank you guys so much for coming out. Same thing as what Liam said. Please follow us at Amada Tapas on Instagram. Leave us a 5-star review on Google. Tell us that you enjoyed your night tonight. And happy Valentine's Day / Galentine's Day. And we'll hopefully see you again at the next one.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all again so much for listening to this Crime Over Wine live episode. We are going to put all of our sources on our website so you can read everything for yourself and probably come up with a few theories too. And if you are wondering what we have in store for you next week, here's a quick sneak peek. Hello, everybody. It's Liam.
And I am Megan McLean. And next week, I am joining the Crime Vineyard with an infamous case that will take you on a ride over 40 years in Des Moines, Iowa. What really happened to Johnny Gosch?
Buckle in and load up on the wine, folks. You're going to need it. We will tell you about this whirlwind of a story next Wine Wednesday on the next episode of Crime Over Wine.
Proud member of the Podnougan Network.